Welcome to the Last Round MMA.
The guy's never beaten me. In order to be the champion, you have to beat the champion.
A podcast for the MMA fan.
Imagine that. Look at everybody up here. They're all dressed like me. They're all trying to talk like me. They're all trying to be me.
Bringing you in-depth interviews and more from across the MMA world.
This is like pride. You know, everybody's here. I feel great. And, you know, I can't wait. Saturday night, I'm going to crush this guy hype.
Are you ready? Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Last Round MMA, and today we have one of the fighters I watched, you know, growing up as I got into MMA. Today we have Kendall the Spider Grove. Thanks for joining me, Kendall.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
All right, let's jump straight into it. I know we're going to be strapped for a bit of time today. So how did you get into MMA? What was the first time you came across it?
I got into MMA, like, I would say my freshman year of high school. I started doing jiu-jitsu at a Brazilian jiu-jitsu place here on Maui. But I was doing it for a year. And then my mom at the time, she couldn't pay for it. It was like 140, 150 bucks a month. And it was like, I was a white belt. And this is back in 94, 95, around there. And no, wait. Yeah, 95, possibly 96, not too good. But, yeah, and I was surprised she could pay for it for almost a year. And I ended up stopping, but I really liked it. And one of my high school friends told me about wrestling. So I started wrestling in high school, got my ass handed to me my sophomore year. I think I lost every match, but just that competitiveness and that will to win, I guess. I wanted to, like, have that my moment of my hand being raised, like, in a cheesy way, conquering another person with my own skills. You know what I mean? Which everyone thought I wasn't going to come back my junior year, but I came back. I started doing good. And then by my senior year, I placed sixth at states at a weight, two weight classes above mine. So I started believing in myself, kind of. And I wanted to go to college, but I wasn't smart enough. I knew I hated school, so I knew I didn't want to go back, but I loved wrestling. But I knew you had to pass your classes. So that dream went out the window, and I just accepted life here on Maui. Started working jobs like tiling, labor jobs, landscaping. And then my same buddy that got me into wrestling was like, hey, let's move to Vegas. I'm gonna go to school there. Let's move there. So I was like, all right, let's go. So we moved there, and within like 3 weeks, this Muay Thai coach from JSTEC, John Lewis's school, Apollo Sebastian, met my friend at 24 Hour Fitness, because my friend got a job there, and was telling him about, oh yeah, you from Hawaii, my gym, the owner is from Hawaii. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He fought in the UFC. You guys should come down. So then my roommate told me about that. So I went down, just interested in doing jiu-jitsu. Never expected to fight. I just wanted to do jiu-jitsu. And I went there. And now, mind you, I was homesick. I was living in Vegas for about a month and a half now. By the time I went into the gym, and because I didn't have money at the time. So by the time I got a job, it was like a month after my friend met Apollo. So right there, I had the money. I went to the gym expecting to do jiu-jitsu, but I seen Apollo, and Apollo roped me into doing his Muay Thai class. And I only had money to do one thing. So, but I met this guy, Sonny Nohara, who's a black belt now. He's from Hawaii, he's from Hilo, but I ended up becoming real good friends with him. He was in Apollo's class, but he was also in John's class or Mark Lehman's class, the jiu-jitsu class. And he was like, bro, you got to come. Fuck it. Like, just do what you got to do to make the money and do the class. It's a good class. There's a bunch of killers, Steve DeSilva, the Beery Brothers, Big Country Nelson, Roy Nelson, Mark Lehman, a bunch of OG guys in that room. So I ended up getting the money, ended up doing two classes, ended up doing a grappler's quest like 4 months after I signed up, came in first. Using layman's style, I fell in love with it. And now, I do not expect to fight. I did not expect to fight. I did not want to fight, actually. Or maybe I just never had the confidence, or maybe never, I don't know. To me, it seemed far-fetched. But I wanted to be a jiu-jitsu world champ. I wanted to, like, following BJ's footsteps, because at the time we were Novo Uniao. John Lewis's school was Novo Uniao, and BJ Penn was Novo Uniao too. So first time ever meeting one of my childhood heroes, or like my high school heroes, was at JSEC when BJ flew in. I forget who he was fighting. I think he was fighting Carl Uno too, and he came in to train a little bit, and I met him there. And I still never wanted to fight, but it sparked a fire, you know what I mean? And then train, did tournaments, won some, lost some. And then Phil Baroni came into the picture. And then Lehman was helping Phil Baroni for his Matt Lillian fight. And he was just like, hey, Kendall, I need help. You want to be a sparring partner for Phil? And I was like, hell yeah, Phil's the man. Like, at the time, he was destroying everybody. Like, he destroyed Dave Manet. One of the craziest knockouts in UFC history at that point. You know what I mean? The guy was out on his feet, and he was keeping him standing up with punches against the cage. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. And then after 2 months, I was the only sparring partner left. Like, I was the only idiot coming back. Now, mind you, I was concussed like 3 times in that whole camp, but I was 22 at the time. I didn't know any better, and I was just gung-ho, you know what I mean? I wanted that respect. I wanted to gain the respect of this UFC fighter, because at the time, he was Phil Peroni. He was beating everybody. And he had this big rematch coming up. So I was like, all right, cool. Boom, 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 boom. And then after the camp, Phil tells me, hey, you fight? And I was like, nah. He's like, you should fight, bro. You got potential. And then right when he said that, changed my whole – I was like, fuck, trying to be a jiu-jitsu world champ. If this UFC fighter is telling me I've got something, let's fucking go with it. And then from that point on, I was possessed. I just wanted to be a fighter. And I was in Vegas for about 10, 11 months at this time, training at JSEC for almost a year. 10 months. And a bunch of bad shit happened to me. My friend who came to Vegas with me, he was going to UNLV. So we had this deal with our apartment to where our rent was cheap. But within 2 months of living in Vegas, my friend moved back to Hawaii, bailed on me, and everything was in my name because I had the best credit. So I was stuck in a lease for a year for my rent. All that. And then, so fast forward, the lease is up. My car gets stolen. I find it. I use all my savings to repair it. My rent goes up, and my job cuts my pay. Because I was, my job cuts my pay. So at the time, my job cuts my pay because I was 19 at the time. I know I said I was 20. I was 20 20-something at the time, but I was 19 because I had a fake ID. This is the first time I moved to Vegas. So my job cut my pay because it was the Tuscany Hotel. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have a casino at the time. But when I came in, they were building the casino. And then when the casino was open, I had to be 21, but I was 20. You know, so I was, they're like, oh, you can't work in a casino. So you got to be stuck in the hotels. So you're only housekeeping. So now you're only getting paid where all the housekeepers get paid. So I was like, fuck, now I can't pay the rent. My rent goes up because now I'm not a student. My car, I have no money, my car, whatever. So I called back home. I was like, hey, bro, I'm struggling. Can you get me a fight? I called one of my friend that moved back. He ended up fighting one time, and then we kept in touch. I still hated him because he moved back to Hawaii, but he was just like, oh, I can get you a fight. So I was like, all right, get me a fight. So I moved back to Hawaii about 2 months before my fight. So I've been in Vegas for a year. I crashed on a couch for a month after I lost my apartment, trained with every savage at JSEC. And then I came back to Maui, trained at my gym here that I ended up training with, Maui Fu contact fighter at the time, Ira Hokano, shout out. Fought my first fight. I fought Marvelous Tefaga. Knocked out his tooth with a knee in the second round. And that was it. I ended up fucking falling in love with the sport. Booked a fight 3 months after that first one. Went back to Vegas, trained for 2 months, came back for a month, fought, smashed. Did that until I fought Joe Riggs in Rumble on the Rock 5. Got destroyed. Then I moved back to Vegas the second time to start my journey to get into the UFC. And that was me fighting the early years of my career. I fought about six times in Hawaii before I moved to California. I had like 3 amateur fights and then 4 pro. And then I was 3-0 pro. And then I fought Joe Riggs on like 4 days notice at the time. And he was supposed to fight in the UFC, which was weird at that time because he was scheduled to fight in the UFC, but he fought me. So in my head, I was like, oh, if I beat him, right, which probably wasn't going to happen, but that's how I thought. You know what I mean? And then he took me down and fucking knocked me unconscious, gave me the worst concussion of my life. And yeah, I forgot like 20 minutes of my life after he knocked me out. And I still don't remember until I woke up in the back locker room, like, whoa. And then the guy who fought after me was sitting down next to me in pain. And I was like, oh shit, what the fuck happened? And my corner was like, oh, you got knocked out. I was like, oh shit. And then, yeah. And then after that fight, I was like, oh, I got to step my game up. If I really want to do this, I gotta get out of here. I gotta go back to Vegas. Vegas is the Mecca. I'm rubbing shoulders and meeting some of the best guys in the sport, you know. And my coach, Mark Lehman, at the time was the man. You know, he was MMA jiu-jitsu at that time. He helped Chuck Liddell, he helped Tito, he did privates with Dana, Lorenzo. He was the first jiu-jitsu coach on The Ultimate Fighter seasons 1 and 2. His school, Cobra Kai Jiu-Jitsu, after he broke off of Novo Niao, became one of the best schools on the planet at that time for jiu-jitsu. And I'm proud to be a part of the original school right behind Cheetahs in Vegas and being part of that jiu-jitsu school shaped me to be who I am as a fighter and as a coach today. I still coach like Layman. I talk shit like Layman. I but a little bit more compassionate, but I feel it's a winning success to jiu-jitsu and competing. But yeah, that was like my early, early years. And then I got in, I moved to Vegas the second time, moved in with my friend Ulysses Gomes, who's a Metro cop now. He fought in the UFC, but I lived with him and his parents, which was cool. Stressful, cool. I lived in his room on his floor for about a month, and then training every day, looking for a job. I got a job laying tile at the Wynn Hotel. Got fired after my probation. I got fired for smoking weed. I pissed dirty because I moved hotels. And that was actually the best thing that could ever happen to me, because my dad got me that job, and he was fucking pissed that I lost that job, especially the way I did. Embarrassed him, you know. He put his neck out there, and because my dad was a Tyler trade, he was good. He did fucking hotels out here in Hawaii. But anyways, he got me the job, lost it. He was pissed, but I had a fight in Mexico. At the time, the one after I fell out of the ring, but I had a fight in Mexico, my second fight in Mexico, and I had, I think, pans in Long Beach, and I was doing intermediate division. I came in first in my division, second in absolute, and I ended up winning my Mexico fight. But my dad was pissed, and he was like, "Oh, you better get a job. I put my name out there. You ain't gonna fucking live off of my dime. Da da da. Get a job. You gotta be a man. Da 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 da. Whatever." I was like, "Okay. I got a fight coming up. I got a jiu-jitsu match. Pay my rent." He's like, "All right, cool. Just send me your video. Send me the footage." Because my dad played football. My dad was an athlete. And so, but he believed in me, but he didn't. He believed in me, but he didn't believe in the sport at the time. Because it was nowhere at the time. It was like 2004, 5 at the time. You know what I mean? So he was like, "Yeah, send me the tapes." And then I guess so he worked with someone that trained with Henzo in New York. He was on, at this time, my dad worked on, he was a merchant marine. He was on a boat working in New York. But I guess so when he was working on the boat in New York, a guy from Henzo's worked with him. And I sent him my footage from my grappling match and my fight. And he was cool. And then he was like, "Oh yeah, that was cool." And then the guy from Enzo was hyping me up to my dad, was like, "Hey bro, your son got talent. He looks good. Like his jiu-jitsu, like da 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 da." So then my dad called me like a week later and said, "Hey bro, fuck, I always wanted you to go to college. I always wanted you to do this." Like, but cause his friend told him, like, "Hey bro, I'll pay for your rent for 4 years, like you're in college. I'll pay for your food for 4 years, like you're in college, whatever. I'll support you in, if you want to fight, I'll support you." I was like, "Whoa, shit, for real? Yeah, boom." And then from there, I trained full time. I moved in with Mark Layman. Because my dad paid my rent. So, and Mark bought a house at the time and he needed roommates. While I was his roommate, Jeff Glover was a roommate at Rafael Lovato Jr. was a roommate. That's how I met Rafael. Numerous other guys. Joe Daddy Stevenson was a roommate who I ended up becoming his roommate after when he moved out. And then I moved out. I was just around some of the baddest, futurist, badderest motherfuckers in the world, you know? And so I was, at the time, I didn't know, but I was destined to make something of myself if I did everything right. You know what I mean? I was already around great people, you know, and so training full time, having ups and downs, booking fights back here in Hawaii. But okay, rewind back to that first fight in Mexico. I got a fight in Mexico. The one, because you mentioned it before, me falling out of the ring. But I'll go back to that one. I was fighting for Eric Del Furio, and I forget his girlfriend at the time. I forget her name, but she was the main promoter. But they had a show called Total Combat down in Tijuana, Mexico. It was illegal in the States at the time. So they used to go across the border and have their shows out there. So I was part of, I think, Total Combat 7 and 8. But 7, I fought, what's his name? Johnny Guns or something Guns. I guess he just got out of prison.
Ricky Guns.
Ricky Guns. There you go. Yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. And what was funny at the time is I was a huge fan of Tito, which was crazy. And then this guy, Ricky, had like, oh, yeah, he just got out of jail. He's like he's this big time whatever. And I was like, all right, motherfucker. So he comes to the weigh-ins looking like Tito, fucking shaved head, dyed head. And I'm like, and he's like fucking trying to punk me out, staring at me like Tito-ish, had that bounce. And I was like, yeah. And then right there, fucking, we show up to the fight. He shows up with red flame shorts, like Jesus Christ. And then we started fighting. And yeah, at that time, I was still a raw fighter. But I felt I was light years ahead of the people I was fighting just because the people I was training with. And I think it showed, but he was all talk. Like, he just had hype behind him. He didn't know how to fight. Like, he knew how to brawl, but like the second I got him down, I took his back, he leaped out of the ring. And when he leaped out of the ring, I was on his back, and I was about to hit the ground. And then my uncle guys had ringside seats, so they caught us. And then he grabbed the ropes, and so he didn't hit. So I jump up real quick. I jump back in the cage, in the ring, because my mind is like, fuck, you're still fighting. Like, keep that adrenaline like going. Don't calm down. Don't start thinking about, like, oh, is he hurt? Is he this? So I jump in and I start looking at him, and he looks right at me, and I'm like, come on, motherfucker, get in the ring. And then he's like, oh, my shoulder. And then, fuck, it was a no contest. He claimed he got hurt falling out of the ring. So yeah, that ended that. And then Eric, who was the matchmaker, he gave me another fight. I ended up fighting this other kid who, it was a good fight that led me into winning their title. And then I fought three times down there, won their title, the Total Combat title. And yeah, elevated my career. Like, some of the Dominic Cruz fought down there, Joey Beltran fought down there, a bunch of guys fought down. Well, at the time, they moved it to California and San Diego. So by the time Dominic guys were on there, it was in the States. But yeah, that was my Mexico. And it was crazy because we were down in TJ. And at that time, my purse was $400. So I fought for $400. And by the time I got back to stateside, like after we drank pretty much, oh, and I ate fucking hot dogs with bacon wrapped around, I was in the hole for like $150. So you know what I mean? So, but it was back then, it's not like how it was. It's not like how it is today. It's not like how it was, man. Like, I get it. Be more business savvy. I don't know. I'm just fortunate to be part of this game and help develop and help be the mortar of MMA, being the part of the beginning, like fucking Ultimate Fighter season 3 winner, like fought back, like when the sport wasn't even like popular, you know, like and fighting when it was illegal in California, so we had to go down to Mexico to fight like for $300 in Baby Rock, where the cartel fucking parties the next night, you know what I mean, in the VIP room where people died, but we fought because that's what we do, we fight.
So do you think that, Kendall, that set you up for the Ultimate Fighter? Like, when did you get the phone call?
Shit, I never got the phone call till I think 2005. Like, I was living with Layman, like I said, just grinding away, trying to make something of myself, doing jiu-jitsu tournaments. Wherever Layman said compete, we competed. Whatever fights I could get back home on Maui, in Hawaii, I would get and retrain. Jason Mahan Miller was another mentor of mine, who Jay Heron, Jason Mahan Miller, Gray Maynard, Kevin Randleman was a fucking legend, and he came in and I helped him get ready for Crow Cop. I was his sparring partner for Crow Cop, throwing those kicks, getting beat the fuck up by him. You know what I mean? Like, and Joe Daddy came in, and then he moved to Vegas from Victorville, and he needed a roommate. So I was like, hey, fuck. I asked Layman. I was like, hey, Layman. He's like, yeah, it's cool. You can bail. I got another roommate that's going to come in. And he had a girlfriend at the time that pretty much hated everybody. So my welcome was done at the house. So, and then I left. I went with Joe, which was a blessing because Joe just got on the Ultimate Fighter. So, and his wife at the time, Maia Stevenson, was pregnant with their first child. And he got the call and he was getting sequestered. He had to go film. So it was just me. So he was like, hey, do me a favor. Help Maia when she needs help. Take her to the doctor or whatever. Like, and then, so I did. I helped, whatever. And then when he got off, he's like, hey, bro, thanks. Maia told me everything. If you want to be on the Ultimate Fighter, they're doing 185 next. I'll put your name in. Fuck yeah. And I was like, fuck yeah. And then I was just like, shit, maybe not. Like, I thought about everyone home. Like, I don't know. I just thought, like you get the opportunity, then you're like, yeah. And then you think, like, wait, are you ready? Like, you're going to go represent yourself, your family, everyone you love, and then you're going to be on national TV. Are you going to fucking lose your first fight and be like a laughing stock? Which is not true, you know what I mean? But that's what you think, you know what I mean? And then I called my dad, and my dad's like, bro, you're never going to get this fucking opportunity again. Or if you do, you're going to have to work your ass off to get it. Right now, you have an opportunity. So I was like, fuck it. And I told Joe, I was like, yeah, I'll put my recommendation in. And then so he put my name in, and then I made it to alternate because I bypassed the highlight footage. Like, I was a friend of a friend, you know what I mean? Like, I was a friend, a request from a winner, you know what I mean? Or a guy who made the finals. He didn't win yet. And then so by the time he had his final cuts was coming down. So they came in, they did the finale, and then the producer came and was like, all right, Kendall, you're an alternate. Like, so if anybody drops out, you're going to be in, like, you know what I mean? And I was like, ah, fuck. All right, cool. Maybe I wasn't ready anyways. You know what I mean? I just chalked it up. All right, I'll fight in Hawaii. I got a fight lined up. Fuck it. Let's go. And then fucking a week later, man, we're moving. A week later, we're moving because Joe Daddy moved into a new house or 2 weeks later, Joe Daddy bought a house and we're moving into it from our apartment. And then as I was reversing a trailer, a guy from Viacom or Spike TV called and was like, "Hey, Mr. Grove, this is so-and-so, the producers from Tough, da-da-da-da-da." And I was like, "Hey, wait, hold on," because I was reversing a trailer. And like every other American, I can't concentrate driving and talking on the phone, and let alone reversing a trailer. So I was like, "Hey, let me call you back." And I just hung up, not knowing like who the fuck he was. Like, I was just in the zone. I was reversing, answered the phone. "Okay, let me call you back." And then right there, I stopped my truck and I was like, "Fuck, he said he was like a producer or something from a fucking Viacom, Spike TV." Like, you know what I mean? I was like, "Oh shit." I parked my truck. I called him back. I was like, "Hey, bro, I'm fucking sorry, bro." And he just started laughing. And I was like, "Hey, bro, sorry, I was reversing a trailer and I bullshit. I was like, I almost hit something." So I was like, and then he was like, "Hey, no, I was just calling to tell you, hey, you're the finalist. You're going to be a cast member of The Ultimate Fighter." I was like, "For real?" And I was like, "No, it can't be, because they told me I was going to be an alternate." Like, "Yeah, you were, but now you're a cast member." So, and then they told me all the details, like, "Okay, you're going to be sequestered. Where do you want to get picked up? Da 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 da." And then next thing you know, I'm at Cobra Kai and someone from the production picks me up. They take me to Palace Station. The next day, we started filming.
How was getting filmed 24/7 and not being able to contact, you know, any friends or family?
I loved it. I loved it. Well, it sucked because I couldn't call no one. But I was never that guy. Like, I'm a hermit. Like, my dad's like a nomad, or he was a nomad. He passed away like years ago. But he taught me and my brother how to just fucking survive, like, by ourselves. Like, you know what I mean? So I can be by myself, like, you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, I love companionship. Like, I can't, like, I'm very fortunate. I have a very, very understanding and caring and loving wife. I have kids that is part me, so they have no choice. They understand what the fuck I think, because they think almost the same thing. But no, I loved every second on that show, because I knew why I was there. And on top of that, I had a great coach. On top of that, my coach brought great assistant coaches. Dean Lister, Saul Solis, God rest his soul. Saul taught me a lot of shit, physically and mentally, about this game. And shout out to Saul. Rest in peace, my brother. You're one of the greatest coaches I ever had. And Dean Lister, Jesus Christ, rolling with him every day and sparring and training with him every day on the show, I felt my game improving. And on top of that, being a high school hero, being Tito Ortiz, being my coach, like, fuck. Like, I was like, I knew I was going to win it when everyone else thought they were going to win it. Like, I just, like, I was like, bro, like, this is what I manifested, like, when I was in high school, when I used to watch this guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, one of my favorite fights with him was him and Frank Shamrock, even though he lost, but it was a great fucking fight. And he was my coach, so I was just stoked. And I proved it. I got better every day. I took out the two guys that was supposed to be in the finals. One guy that I took out, Caleb, which was funny because I did, Caleb was in town in Vegas. I think he came in to audition for The Ultimate Fighter season 3. So he did a private with Mark Lehman, and Mark was like, "Hey, you want to help me with the private?" I was like, "Hell yeah, let's do it." And then it was Caleb. And then I was just Caleb's dummy, and I was like, "Oh shit, like, I didn't know him. I didn't know he was going to be on the show. I didn't know he was going to be on the show until I seen him. And but I knew he was the fucking man, just rolling with him, talking with him before. He was the man. Like, I think he was undefeated in Canada. But his jiu-jitsu, when I went with him, was better than mine. Like, I can admit that. Like, when he did that private, like, I was like, oh, shit, this guy is fucking good. He's strong. He's good. And he's a middleweight. He's huge. Fuck, I hope I never fight him. Da-da-da-da-da. And then fucking months later, I walk on the Ultimate Fighter, and he's through the door. I'm like, all right, got to step my game up. So I knew immediately. I was like, all right, my mindset, as soon as I seen him, I didn't even know who Ed Herman was. Until a couple of the cast members started talking about him when we were on the show. Like, they fought on the same card as him and whatever. And but I knew Caleb because he gave me his resume. I watched some of his fights with Layman. So I was like, all right. So I was that quiet church mouse the whole time. Like, all right, I'm going to fight him. I want to fight him. I want to fight him. And I knew I was going to fuck with his ego when I called him out. And that's why I called him out. You know what I mean? So I called him out and I beat him and got me into the finals. And me and Ed put on a great fight. And I had a decent career in the UFC. I liked it. I felt I could have done better, but that's my mistake, you know?
In the house, in the Ultimate Fighter 3, that's where you met your good friend Michael Bisping for the first time.
Yeah, but I'm American, you know what I mean? But I'm from Hawaii. I was born and raised in Hawaii. So I'm not from the States. But I am. You know what I mean? But so, like, I kind of gravitate more towards, you know what I mean? Like, foreigners. I don't know. We related to a lot of things. You mean the way he grew up is the way we grew up. You know what I mean? Fighting a lot, talking shit, you know? And Michael is just super cool. And I gravitated towards him because he was a 205 pounder and I knew I wasn't going to fight him. I knew I would never fight him. You know what I mean? So, and he was cool. And he was my teammate. And we both felt like, because we were both the second pick, like Matt Hamill was Tito's first pick and Rory Singer was his first middleweight pick. So we kind of both, on the ride back to the house, we sat in the back of the van and we were talking. We were like, I think they showed it on one of the episodes of, like, yeah, this fucker saying, oh, yeah, Matt Hamill's his champion, Roy's his champion, and, like, his champions need training partners and good training partners, and then they picked us. So we kind of had that chip on our shoulder towards Tito and towards just that thought process, like, looking past us and just declaring, okay, those two guys is your winners. We're just there to help those two guys on your team that you think is going to win. You know what I mean? So, we had that chip on our shoulder. That's why he was always in my corner. He always came with me to cut weight. I was with him. We kind of just pumped each other up in that fucking weird way.
For the interview.
Mike's 100% real. Like, that's why I like him. Like, if I said something stupid, he'll tell me, like, bro, you're stupid. Like, what the fuck? And, like, you can do the same to him. And, like, that's why I love Mike. Mike was, and he was a fucking surgeon with his hands and feet. You know what I mean? On top of that, he was just tough as nails, man.
For the interview, I went back and I went on YouTube and I was watching the greatest highlights of Ultimate Fighter 3. And I think the second highlight was your drinking session with Michael Bisping, where you were encouraging everybody to do shots. And what can you remember about that night?
Nothing. No. I remember we were drinking because the producers, after the first day, the producers told us, okay, we're not going to train the next day. We got a photo shoot with Maxim magazine. So at the time, we're all like, oh, fuck. And in my head, I was like, yeah, Maxim magazine at the time had was a man's fucking magazine. You know what I mean? Had all the in things to do at that time. So I was like, yeah, we're going to be in Maxim. Da, 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 da. So I started getting everybody hyped. We don't got to train. We got to do this. So I heard the reputation of English people. So I was like, oh, yeah, let's drink. Fuck it. And then, but I'm not a drink. I can drink, but I'm a funny drunk. Okay. I'll crack jokes. I'll be the butt of jokes. But I just want to have a good time, fun. Like, I don't want to fight. I hate fighting when I'm drunk. It just kills the mood. Mike and Ross is the two best guys I ever drank with. They're funny. They can put beers down. But what I remember from that night is nothing. I wish I forgot. Fucking, I went up to my room. After everything was done, they were like, go to sleep, you drunk bastard. Go, you can't handle your liquor. Now, Mike only knew me for a day. You know what I mean? So, I go over there. And then Mike Nichols, he's a tattoo artist from Denver. And he was cutting everybody's hair. But he had buzzers. And they're like, oh, let's shave off his eyebrow. And then fucking, they're holding me down. But Cobra Kai Jiu-Jitsu, man. They only got a little piece of my eyebrow, motherfuckers. But he ended up cutting my eyelid. And because I was drinking all night, I was bleeding all day the next day. They couldn't stop it during my photo shoot, motherfuckers.
So fast forward to the end. Obviously, you got to the final. And in the final, you fought Ed Herman. What can you remember about getting to the final and how much pressure was on you for that? It was a six-figure contract and obviously the UFC contract.
That was a good camp. Right after I got off the Ultimate Fighter, Tito was fighting Forrest Griffin, and he asked me to come up and help him. So I was like, yeah, let's go. So right after, I went up, helped him train. So I was first-time experience Big Bear. So I was in the elevation training every day, kind of living that life, living my dream. And then right after that, we came back to Vegas and started getting ready for the finale, which was a few months away. June of 2006. I don't know when Tito fought Forrest, but it was right after that fight. I came back to Vegas and I just started busting my ass. I'm training at Cobra Kai, training at Zion's, which was Extreme Couture's before, which was John Wood's gym, who he owns Syndicate now. But back then, when there was no Extreme or Syndicate, it was Zion's. And Forrest Griffin, Jay Heron, Tyson Griffin, Mike Pyle, everyone used to train there, and that's how I got ready, man. And everyone at Cobra Kai at the time, I knew I was physically, mentally, my conditioning was through the roof, and I think that's what won that fight for me, is my conditioning, just the will to not accept the position, to keep on moving, keep on fighting, keep on striking, always doing something. And I won the Ultimate Fighter. I'm a fucking going down in the histories of being the third Ultimate Fighter winner.
What's it like for you, you know, being in the back, getting your hands wrapped, knowing that you're going out for war?
It's a love-hate relationship. you know, because you're excited to go out and show all that you've learned, all what you know, all what you're capable of doing, all what you feel, all the things that you did in sparring on all your high-level sparring partners, that you know the guy across from you is just like a man, just like the guy you've been training with. Maybe some of the guys you've trained with is just as better. And but then you start thinking, but he can be one step ahead of you. Like, a bunch of shit goes through your head. You win a million times, you lose 1,000 times before you even touch gloves and fucking go in your head. Well, for me, I only can speak for myself and a few other fighters that say that, oh yeah, I feel the same way. Like, you know what I mean? I think the same thing. But for me, I just think of every scenario, and yeah, go through my checklists, go through reminding myself to always be aware. Bro, I've been knocked out before. It's not a lovely feeling. I've been choked out. It's not a fucking great feeling. So I know how it feels. I don't like that feeling. So I don't want it to happen again. So yeah, all that shit runs through your head when you're getting your hands wrapped. Once it's wrapped, you're like, fuck yeah, let's go. Now time is the enemy. Now it feels like it's going by either fucking super slow or you're up. Like, whoa, I just taped my hands. Like, fuck, let's warm up. You know what I mean? So it's either gonna go super, you're gonna prolong it or it's fast. And but then for me, the second I'm getting Vaseline, the butterflies go away and it's kill or be killed. It's like, fuck, you're here. Go do what you love to do. You know, try do it at the best of your ability and whatever happens, happens. You trained your ass off for it. Fuck it, go.
As a fighter, does it take practice for you to be able to like control your anger and, you know, function in a high stressful situation?
Yes, I believe so. And as a teacher now and as a coach, I preach that a lot when I rarely did that. Like controlling your adrenaline was the hardest thing for me. And but the greats can do it. Like, you know what I mean? Controlling your emotion, like anger is emotion. So controlling your emotions during a fight. Yeah, that's always been one of the hardest things for me. And but I feel it's hard for me as a fighter, but I feel I'm a better coach because of it. You know what I mean? Like, I can coach my fighters or my jiu-jitsu students or especially my kids. I got a good kids program, a competition kids program. So I teach them that. I teach them how to control their emotions because kids like me couldn't control. I could to an extent, but at the highest level, it looked like I was, but inside I was still battling that, I could admit. But yeah, it is what it is.
As a coach, do you just put them in stressful situations so they get used to it and they get used to the adrenaline? Is that how you coach them?
Yes. A lot of bad positions, a lot of start in bad positions, and get the fuck out. Whatever. Yeah, you're good. Like, yeah, it's hard to get you there, but what if you get there? What if someone puts you there? What are you going to do? How are you going to get the fuck out? Are you going to panic and freak out and then be still stuck there, panic, freak out, miraculously get out? But sometimes when you panic, good guys are going to keep you there. And what are you going to do then? You know what I mean? And sometimes it's checkmate. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm trying to teach guys and give guys all the moves, every possible move before their checkmate, and have that as a resource. But, yeah.
You spent 5 years in the UFC. You were released in 2011. And in an interview after that, you said during your career, you at times you were your own worst enemy. What did you mean by that?
What we just talked about, you know what I mean? I dealing with my emotions, dealing with personal problems, fighting. Like, now again, for me, I'm just speaking for me. Call me an idiot, call me whatever. But for me, fighting is pure, like the purest shit. Like, you know, it's like two human beings, highly trained, going out, or we like to assume we're highly trained, go out and may the best man win. May the best prepared, smartest man go out there and win. And sometimes I wasn't the most prepared. Sometimes I let outside influences influence me. But that was me. Again, those are all my decisions. You know what I mean? I made those decisions. And where I'm at now in my life, I'm fortunate because it molded to where I am today. I'm happy. I'm at peace with whatever happened. Like early when I got let go and I was saying I was my own worst enemy, I wanted to get back in there. So I wanted to change everything. I wanted to do everything and I wanted to get some wins. And that's when I fought like 3 times in 4 weeks. And because I was trying to get back to the UFC, I was trying to, where I beat Derek Brunson, where I beat like Joel Cronin, Ariel Gandula, who was a WEC veteran. I fought him in Canada. Joel Cronin here on Maui. Derek Brunson in fucking Kansas City. And on the cusp. And then right after I fought Manoa Man in Hawaii, I was supposed to fight Jay Silva. Oh, I fought Jay Silva in Vegas. And if I won that fight, I would have got back into the UFC. But again, I was my own worst enemy. I let that determine the fight. You know what I mean? I'm not supposed to go in there like, okay, if I win this, I'm back in the UFC. That's me putting all my eggs in one basket. Me looking past Jay Silva. Me just thinking about the win and not the opponent. I don't know. That's just the way I see it. And I put all that pressure on myself and then boom, knocked down to the bottom. I was on a four fight win streak. Boom, to the bottom. Then I fought in Poland, lost to arguably fucking Poland's greatest star, Mamed Kadel. I think that's how you say his last name. And then thinking I'm a fucking loser, and then they call me up to fight their champ, Mamed Madela. Miha Matela. And I beat the shit out of him for 3 rounds, and my contract only said 3 rounds. And then I literally beat the shit out of him. I fucking broke his orbital. I broke his nose. He was bleeding out of both of his ears because I broke his fucking eardrum, hammer fisting his fucking head. And I'm standing on the ropes like an asshole. Like I just became the KSW world champ. Again, my own worst enemy. Let my adrenaline fucking like, and then but again, the fight was over. My mind said 3 rounds. Mm-hmm. There was no, or if it was close, you would have to do a fourth deciding round. You know what I mean? So I was like, ah, fuck it. And then I got taken down and I was over it. And again, I'm my own worst enemy. Like, you know what I mean? He was beaten up, but I was just so over it. I was like, fuck you guys. Like, fuck this shit. You just took this world title away from me when I clearly beat this fucker's ass. No one cheered for me before the fight. Everyone cheered for me after the fight. That tells you something. And then like three days later, I like fucking six Polish guys fucking write to me is you are the KSW champ. Like, but that meant something to me. You know what I mean? And so that would be like, I'm my own worst enemy. You know what I mean? My own mind. Like, you could say give up before it was over, but yeah, I don't know.
And going through all those highs and lows and everything that you see now, you think just helps you, you know, be the great coach that you now are?
I believe so 100%. I believe I'm becoming a better coach than I ever was a fighter. I was still, I was a good fighter. I'm still the best fighter Maui produced, and I'm trying to produce. And there, I have a kid, Kalehua Moniz, who's, he just lost his number one contender fight in Fury, but he's on the cusp, man. And I'm trying, pushing hard for him. I got a few other guys, amateurs, that are showing me a lot of potential, and I'm just excited. I got throughout the years, I established a good name for myself in the sport. I'm not gonna say I didn't burn any bridges, but I feel I haven't, and that's helped me get my fighters fights and opportunities, and even my jiu-jitsu guys getting them fights on high rollers and other fight to wins, or the opportunity to get them on these shows are good. So where I have relationships with the owners, and so
What is it about such a picturesque, you know, island? Everybody in America goes to Hawaii, you know, for vacation. They love it. People get married there. But it creates such a great crop of fighters like yourself, you know, Max Holloway, BJ Penn.
It's in our DNA. We're 100 years ago, we were still fighting to the death. You know what I mean? Well, no, 200 years ago. Forgot we're late in the game. But we come from a warrior lineage. So it's in our blood. And then we grow up where it wasn't like the U.S. mainland, more like England. You know, we didn't have guns here back when I was kids. Where I believe in England, it was illegal. So, if you had a gun, only gangsters had guns, you know what I mean? So a lot of times you guys would just fight or get batted, chained, whatever. But majority of the time you'd fight. And same here. We had problems, we would fight. And I think just growing up in that
– I think you muted it.
Helps prepare you to be a fighter. I got kids in my kids class. I got a kid who's 9 years old, and this kid, you can't get him out of my gym. All he wants to do is learn how to destroy other kids and people, but for sport. He doesn't want to do it to be a punk. He wants to compete. And in my head, I'm like, please be a doctor. Please be a lawyer. Please go to college. Please do something. But if all that doesn't work out, please continue to train, because this kid, you see, I've trained with world champs, Tito, Randy. I was one of Randy's punching bags for Tim Sylvia, because I was the only 6'6 bastard at Extreme Couture's. So I was getting my ass handed to him. And I credit that camp for my Alan Belcher, because 2 weeks later I fought Alan Belcher. And leading up to that Alan Belcher fight, I was sparring and training with Randy Couture every fucking day, helping him get ready for Tim Sylvia. So that helped me put that exclamation point on fucking Alan Belcher, when everyone thought I was going to get smashed, you know? But yeah, drew off the subject. What was I talking about?
Why Hawaii creates such great fighters.
But you just grew up fighting, selling your scores, but now we're like California back in the day. People are getting shot, people are getting stabbed. It's not Hawaii anymore. Mm-hmm. And we've adapted that lifestyle, and where I used to always bitch, like, bro, we're always like 10 years behind the mainland. Da, 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 da. Now I'm like, fuck, I wish we was 20 years behind. Mm-hmm. Just because crime went up, people see opportunity here. People, like, guys from the mainland move here, buy the houses, rent it out. Now it's not, you know, but Hawaii is still Hawaii.
So as we touched on earlier, you were released by the UFC in 2011. And during that time, you said that Michael Bisping actually helped you during a lot of the low points, you know, like on and off the mats. If you could just tell us, you know, in what way he helped
you.
Yeah,
I got let go from the UFC. I seen Mike at Ruka. I'm training for Jay Silva, and Mike just moved to the States and told me, hey, if I never ever needed help, hit him up. And I think after I fought Jay, I hit him up, and he flew me out when he was fighting Brian Stann, and I stayed at his house. He paid me to be his training partner, gave me an opportunity. And at that time, I had to cut camp short because I found out I was having twins. So I had to fly back home to Maui. But after I got settled, he flew me back almost every fight to help him get ready for it. And then from that point on, and then anytime I had a fight in Bellator, and then that's about the same time I signed with Bellator. And that's when anytime I had a fight, I would go out to California. I would stay at his house, train at Ruka, and he would just help me out that way, you know? But it was just fortunate that simultaneously we both had fights coming up. So, and then I was fortunate to go corner him in Macau, China, in Canada, and in Australia for the first Luke Rockhold fight, for the Kung Lee fight, and for the CB Dalloway fight. So Mike helped prolong my career.
You fought for the Bellator title May the 15th, 2015, against Brandon Halsey. You and Brandon didn't get on in the build-up to this fight. No. Can you explain the hatred behind that?
I met Brandon with Justin McCauley getting ready for that Jay Silva fight. And we're in Anaheim Hills. That's where Justin McCauley used to live. And we're at a high school over there, his old high school. And we're in the wrestling room, and Halsey was there. And I was 3 days out, so I was just sweating. And then Halsey was over there training with Justin. And I went up to him, I shook his hand. I was like, hey, what's up, Brandon? Da 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 da. Train with Tito, da da da. Because he helped Tito a lot. I guess so Tito helped him, or Tito used to bring him in. And he kind of bigly is, oh, yeah, whatever, fuck you, like kind of snubbed me. And I was like, ah, yeah, whatever. I didn't think much of it. I was like, whatever, I'm cutting weight. I could be an asshole. And then years later, I go up to camp for Tito, and I forget who he was fighting, and Brandon Halsey was there. And then when I get up there, we're at his house in Big Bear, and Brandon was leaving. And this is like the first time he kind of seen me train. And then I was training with Tito, and he would walk in and he would watch. And I was holding my own. I got a couple of takedowns. Tito got up. I just working positions. But at that time, my cardio was pretty good. And he left. But then when he left, everyone was gone. Everyone was on a bike ride, and I just stayed back. And when he left, he took a bunch of groceries, like eggs, fucking cereal, and a bunch of shit. And I was like, oh, I didn't think much of it. And then me and Perillo, Jason Perillo, were cruising. And then I ended up telling him, I was like, oh, yeah, Jose left. Da, 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 da. And I was like, bro, it was weird, but the fucker took the eggs. Da, 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 da. And he's like, what? And then I think that's what led it on. And fucking, I guess so, Tito called him and fucking snapped. And then fucking, I guess, I don't know. That's why his animosity towards me, because I ratted him out because he took eggs, cereal, whatever. And then I got the fight with him. Then he started talking shit. Then I was like, fuck you, you juice head. Because, like, fucking, he did. It wasn't secret in our world. Like, fucking, it was known fact. And my coach at the time, dumbass, left his email open at Huntington, the Huntington where he used to train. And then my buddy at the time jumped on the computer and all his files was open. And it was a fucking to-do list on how to cycle on and off of what he was doing. So I was like, fuck this guy. So I won the fight, but I lost the fight.
So was it a hard one to take because of your hatred towards him?
Nah, it was a hard one to take because, fuck, after the fight, I had him. And like after the fight, I seen I had him. He was getting carried off. His foot was fucked. And I was like, fuck. But he just overwhelmed me. And I can't take that away from him. He took me down. He controlled me. He couldn't submit me. He couldn't do anything, but he just overwhelmed me. Like I was fine with the shots, but I guess I wasn't intelligently defending myself. But I lost that fight, no matter how you cut it. I ain't going to say I should have won, like, oh, I was robbed or whatever. But, yeah, it's kind of hard to swallow, but to me, fight's a fight. You know, put me on suicide watch for 24 hours, and then after that 24 hours, I'm good. It's just a loss. You move on, you know what I mean?
And then you transitioned over to Bare Knuckle, August the 25th, 2018. You fought in BKFC against Bruce Abramski, where you won. That was BKFC 2. Did you watch the first event? And then in an interview, I saw that you guessed how big it was going to become.
Yeah. I kind of knew it. Like everything else in this world, everything comes full circle. Like Bare Knuckle evolved into boxing. Boxing evolved into kickboxing. Mm. Kickboxing, Muay Thai evolved into MMA. You know, a form of fighting or competing fighting. And then now it's going, and I just thought, I was like, fuck, it's back to Bare Knuckle again. Because, like, only high-level boxing fights you really want to watch. There's no, you know what I mean? But in Bare Knuckle, you kind of want to watch everyone. Because, people are attracted to seeing gory shit. Or like seeing like blood and stuff, but the second they see it, they can't. But the excitement of how it happens, I think that's why Bare Knuckle is the way it is, and it's all stand up. You don't get no one laying down. You might get somebody grabbing, but and it's 2 minute rounds. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I like fuck it, that's fast. You know what I mean? So. That's why you see a lot of people fucking taking the fight to them. That's why it's exciting because people fight. They fight, you know, and it's real shit. Guys get slapped. I got slapped. Fuck it. You know what I mean?
In your second fight in BKFC 3, you lost to Marshall Stamps, which is the one you're talking about. that currently has over 2 million views on YouTube.
Is that good?
When you look at some of the other fights, like in your career, that's up there with one of the biggest views. That just kind of shows the growth of bare knuckle.
Yeah. It was a funny knockout. You know what I mean? On top of that, I showed a lot of heart because I still wanted to fight. Like my fucking brain was like scrambled, but I was like, I'm still in a fight. I knew I was still in a fight. So he was like here, but he was here in my vision, but he was really here in real life. So I was like here, and then I was just getting fucking whacked. And yeah, but it was a great fight. It was a great finish on his part. You know what I mean? And and then I shit the bed with fucking Hector Lombard. I'm embarrassed for that one. That's the one. That's one I actually hurt inside for myself and anyone who supports me, because I didn't even throw a punch. Like he overwhelmed me. I had a great camp. I was in shape, but anything I say is excuses. So fuck it, live and learn. And yeah, that was my last one. I fought a MMA fight here on Maui. That was my last MMA fight. I got the triangle against Anthony Ruiz back in WFC. That was good, but yeah. I feel, but I have my own gym now too, so I enjoy teaching. I haven't officially retired yet, but I'm still leaving a possibility for a bare knuckle fight.
Out of everything that you've competed in, you know, MMA, bare knuckle, do you have a favorite?
Jiu-jitsu. But I would say my favorite was probably fighting in Poland. Would probably be like one of my favorite events, even though I lost. Like the crowd there was just unbelievable, like packed house. It was like pride, you know, the entrances and how they made the fighters feel. And I appreciated that. UFC was great. Bellator, I had great, great experiences. I have nothing ill will towards them. Just a couple guys at Bellator, like executives that kind of gave me a raw deal, but fuck it. UFC always been really cool to me and like treated me nice. I don't hold them anything. I got paid what I was supposed to be getting paid. I felt I was treated fairly. Bare knuckle, same. I love that organization. I love Dave Feldman. He's funny, he's cool, he's like one of us, he's like one of the boys, but he's the promoter. Bare knuckle is fun, rootless but fun. But I think so, that's me as a fighter. I like any form of combat. Anything new is fun. Like when bare knuckle came, I was like, fuck yeah, I just want to do this. Like this is like I said, full circle. We went from now back to bare knuckle.
Who would you say is the best fighter you've ever faced?
It's hard. I fought a lot of good fighters. The best fighter to beat me, or that I beat, or just in general?
Just in general, someone where you got out the cage or the ring and you thought, man, they're good.
Tim Bolch is one of them. Mark Munoz, obviously, is one of them. Mark Munoz, I was like, fuck, this guy's tough as fuck. Who else? Hector hit hard. Hector hit real hard. Who else? Jorge Rivera hit me hard. Like he was one of the hardest guys to ever hit me. Like, you know what I mean? One punch, like, boom, whoa, fuck. I was concussed, but I still remember that fucking, that punch. Who else? Yeah, I can't really. I had tough ones. Damian Maia was fun. I felt real good in that fight, even though I was getting out positioned. But for me, I felt like, oh, this jiu-jitsu black belt world champ can't submit me in an MMA fight. Like, was a victory for myself. Maybe that's stupid for, like, thinking that. But I was just like, yeah, fuck you guys. Evan Tanner was a special one for me because he died, like, 2-3 months later. And he was a former world champ. And he was one of the nicest guys on the planet. Who else? Ed Herman was cool. That was a good fight. That I think that fight is the one that shaped, got my momentum going. And then Alan Belcher took me to that stratosphere, and then fucking Patrick Pate shit on me. But that's why I love this game. That's why I love watching this game, because anything can happen. It wasn't my time. You know what I mean? But it could be yours. It could be, like, you know what I mean? That's why I love this sport. That's why I look at Gaethje. The fucking Oliveira missed weight. Gaethje could come out fucking, you know? He has that mental edge on you already. Fucker's weak. He already missed weight. Fucker already lost his belt. He can't win the belt. You know what I mean?
Is there anybody that you would have liked to have fought that you haven't so far?
Nah, nobody right now.
There's no one you've looked at and thought that would be a good test, or just a friend or something like that you'd like to share the ring
with? I might have wanted to fight Rich Franklin. Rich Franklin was one that was a test at the time, especially after he got lost to Anderson. But when I after I lost to Cote, I knew that wasn't gonna happen. Who else? Hector Lombard at the time in the UFC. That was it at the time. Yeah.
Would you say that you're one of the last, like, gladiators or warriors of mixed martial arts, and most people are now kind of businesslike?
No, no, I'm not the last. I'm a dying breed, though. We are a dying breed. There's still a few guys out there that I feel has that mentality that are still doing it. You know, fuck all the OGs, Clay Guida, fucking Jim Miller.
Cowboy Arlovsky.
Cowboy, all those guys. Fucking Arlovsky. Like, they're all cut from the same cloth. But
Ken, was there anybody that you trained with, or, you know, maybe sparred with, that was the most talented fighter but didn't make it, you know, due to injuries, or they just didn't want to turn pro?
There's a few guys here. I know there's a few guys here in Hawaii that, like, you train with them in the gym and they're like, wow. And then they can't pull the trigger in a real fight. I guess so. It's that transitioning setting. I don't know. But as to the people I've trained with, like getting ready for fights, everyone's pretty much been dialed in. There are some guys where I thought, fuck, bro, you should be killing it, but they just had bad matchups, or they would be destroying everybody in the gym. Guys who would come in that are pros, that are like high level pros, and they're destroying them in the gym, but when it comes out to it, and then they're fighting guys, but could be injuries, could be style make fights. I don't know. That I can't. I had my own problems that I had to deal with. I cannot speak for anybody else, but I've seen it. But for the most part, all the high level guys were pretty much, they fought at high levels too. Can't take nothing away.
I know you touched on, you said you haven't, you know, fully retired. What would be the perfect last fight for you? Like, what city, what opponent? Is it going to be MMA or bare knuckle? Like, if you could pick it.
Somewhere I can soccer kick someone in the head, or the opportunity to soccer kick someone in the face when they're on the ground, or knee them on the face. So I always wanted to fight in Japan or in one of those, because I like their rule sets. But or bare knuckle, I'm open to that. Kendall Grove, Joe Riggs, 3. I won one, he won one, and the deciding factor is bare knuckle, but I don't know.
He just fought, right?
I know. He lost. I just lost too, so there we go.
But perfect.
That'll be my swan song, because we both got one on each other. It would be the swing bout, bare knuckle, stand up. But I'm cool with Joe. Like, I have nothing but respect, but I know he's a businessman. I'm a businessman. If it makes sense, if you can build it, you can fight it, make money, just do it. But I'm over the hill. I'm old. He's old. There's a bunch of young fighters, so if people want to see it, we can do it. But, yeah.
What would you say is the secret to your longevity in the sport?
Listening to my body at the end of my career. Just luck, where I never got injured, severely injured, up until recently, or not severely, but and being smart, training smart, I think. Knowing when to call it a quit, knowing when to say, all right, yeah, cool. Like, fucking camp's done, or no need spar this week, or like, you know what I mean? Like moderation.
One question, Kendall, I always like to finish on. After everything we've spoke about today, all the things that you've gone through in your life, what would you tell somebody that wants to follow in your footsteps and wants to be a professional fighter?
Do your research on camps, do your research on disciplines, on what you're comfortable in doing and what you're capable of doing, diets, do your due diligence on everything that has to do with the sport, and then do it. But do it right, do it smart, don't take shortcuts. Shortcuts will either not get you to your destination or get you to a different destination that you're not going to like to be at. So, yeah, don't take shortcuts. Do your due diligence. Do your research on management, on organizations, on fights, on everything. Marketing yourself, on how you're marketing yourself. And don't burn a bridge. You never know if you got to fucking get across back to that pond.
All right, Kendall, I appreciate you giving me, you know, an hour and a half of your day. If you just want to tell everybody where they can find you on social media, about your gym, anything you've got coming up.
Yeah. Find me on Instagram, Kendall Grove MMA BJJ. I got shadow banned because I talk too much shit, too much truth about COVID, standing up for all the maskless people out in the world. So I got shadow banned, but it's Kendall Grove MMA BJJ. I don't have a Twitter. I have a Twitter, but I lost my passcode and I got a new phone, so I'm not on it. So, and go to my gym, INI MMA Academy on Maui. I have a lot of prospects. I have a great kids program. I have a great MMA, jiu-jitsu, anything. If you're on Maui, if you vacation on Maui, you want to come train, step into an open mat, look me up, come in. I'll be more than happy to roll with you or teach you something that you might not know.
We are at TL.
Shout out to my loving wife, Anna. I love you. I would not be here without you. I would probably be dead in a ditch somewhere if I haven't met you. I love you. Thank you for supporting me, being behind me, and helping me grow our gym to what it is and being successful. And we are changing kids' lives here on Maui because we pay attention to them and we're teaching them jiu-jitsu, discipline, self-respect, and also honor. And so if you are on Maui and are interested in jiu-jitsu or having your kids do jiu-jitsu, please come down to INI MMA Academy, 401 Ho'okai Street, Wailuku, Hawaii, 96732, Maui, Hawaii, one of the seven islands.
And we are at TLR MMA on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find us on all good podcasts. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLRMMA.